Okay, final bit then. The integration of desire is, well, obviously a broad term for how conflicting desires can be brought to work together. I think we need to see that not just at an individual psychological level, but also at a social and political level. And perhaps the prime reason for that is that anything that appears to be inner is also outer, and anything that appears to be outer is also inner. There's you know, that's a false dichotomy that we often tend to make between the inner and the outer. But each of them has, you know, close connections with the other. Supposing I've got an inner conflict in meditation, say, between something I'm obsessed with and want to think about, so say my plans for the next talk or whatever it is, and the desire to meditate. Well, obviously, those are both also outer things. They exist in the social world as well as in my individual world. So the desire to meditate also, when I'm here, is going to be with you guys, and the desire to think about my next talk would also be has a social context and is to do with other people's expectations and society more broadly. Yeah. So what we have inwardly is represented in terms of what we've experienced outwardly. And then, of course, it works the other way around. The conflicts which people tend to see outwards are also reflected inwards. The kinds of hatred people have of each other in wartime, for example, you know, that's their view, their model of what the enemy is like is one that they're constantly, if they reflected on it, you know, we'll constantly encounter inwardly as well. So it's not as though we can make this hard and fast distinction between the two. So I think there's no real distinction between inner and outer conflict. There's obviously a gradation. There are conflicts which we tend to see more in one set of terms or the other, but that also relates to how we address conflicts, I think. So you can obviously address conflicts at a psychological level. You can see them as issues within the individual mind, and you can meditate and reflect and so on to try and address those conflicts. But you can also see those conflicts at the socio-political level. And a lot of the sources of those conflicts may perhaps only be addressable or may be primarily need to be addressed at a socio-political level. And that's where I think the issue of addressing conditions comes in, because if integration can only really take place by addressing conditions better, some of those conditions may require addressing at a global political level, lower political level. So if you've got something like global warming as an example, obviously that can only be addressed, or it's not that it can only be addressed, but one of the ways in which it needs to be addressed is global. But that could also obviously create individual moral conflicts for each of us about how we behave in relation to our carbon emissions or whatever. And that might, you know, can also be seen in terms of conflicts within us. Now, these kinds of social or political conflicts, I think, are often entrenched by their relationship with metaphysical beliefs. So this relates to ideas about how metaphysical beliefs function, really, that we don't have grounds in experience for metaphysical beliefs. They're not really useful to us in experience, because we can't really make use of them within our everyday purposes, but they do have a some sort of purpose in terms of helping us relate to a group of other people who also hold this metaphysical view, or assume this metaphysical view. And I think I can see how this has evolved as being useful to groups, because what groups want is loyalty. What will assure loyalty? People sharing a model of what's going on, and particularly that model being different from other people's model. So some of the ways in which groups, in fact, some of the sorts of beliefs groups can have seem to be purely about being different from other groups. You know, so think about the dietary laws followed by the Hebrews in the Old Testament times. You know, why couldn't the Hebrews eat meat with milk? You know, why was this the regulation? Well, I don't think it was much to do with properties of meat or milk. It was just that was different from the other tribe, which ate meat with milk. So there's you can get particular fixed ideas which are taken to be absolute, which are used by groups to create a sort of, you could see it as a group ego, if you like, so a sort of a fixed obsessive idea about how things are, which is shared by the left hemispheres of everybody in the group, which they get attached to, and which they will remain attached to as long as that remains. You know, there isn't that sort of sense of provisionality or that critical perspective brought to bear on it. So to avoid this kind of metaphysical entrenchment, see, reflective and critical thinking needs to take place both at the individual level and also in discussions in groups to try and make groups provisional, despite the forces which I think tend to make groups dogmatic. You know, there's a kind of inertia that creates dogmatism in groups. Okay, so that's kind of an overall outline of how integration works in general. So just perhaps to finish with a summary of practical ways of addressing of creating integration or of addressing conflict. So at the individual level, or the inner level, we talked about how meditation can integrate, particularly by this process of relaxing our conflicts, our conflicting models, and getting a wider perspective, particularly through the right hemisphere, of what's happening. And I think reflection can do the same thing. So effective reflection is really bringing awareness to bear on our thinking and on our beliefs. Care of our own states, I think that's about sort of, well, you could call it looking after yourself, you could call it an aspect of personal ethics, so maintaining a sort of sense of what sort of state one is in, if one's feeling irritable, for example, being aware of that and making allowances for it. So obviously that helps in preventing conflict becoming worse if some of the conditions for it are there. And in addressing those issues. So however we go about that, opposing deniers need to be relaxed and placed in a larger context. But then, if we're thinking primarily in terms of outer conflicts at the socio-political level, that's where things like NVC, which Julian's going to talk about this evening, mediation techniques of various kinds can come in. And obviously all kinds of practical and political action. Again, I suppose mediation is always incredibly useful, but will be times when mediation is not enough because the conditions that continue to create the conflict need addressing in order to prevent that conflict arising in the first place, which is where, you know, you just have to do something about global warming, for example, if that's going to be in the long term the cause of the conflict. So that's where I think the middle way in integration can provide a vision for leading one's life from the individual level right up to the political level. Mm.